this fifth edition of the Becoming Human in the Cosmos podcast, based on the book of the same title on Amazon. This podcast will center on the second chapter, titled Death Birth. Visit our website, hazelproductions.com. Chapter 2, Death Birth. Now that the idea of eschatological thinking, thinking like God, is on our radar, let's apply it to death. I wrote previously that no one is ever killed, no one ever dies, in the sense that we cease to exist in any form whatsoever. In a sense, we have already been through at least three deaths, if we define death as leaving one state irrevocably behind and moving on to a next and new state, a spiritual advancement. Our first death was when we were pulled from that pool of anonymous potential and embodied in an intelligence. There was no going back, only onward from there. As we are immortal, eternal beings, there is no such thing as death as is currently conceived in the world, that is, where one ceases to exist in any form whatsoever. Therefore, we need to redefine death to get a clearer look at it. I would define death as any milestone in one's life where you cease activity in one sphere and commence it in another, usually a higher or more advanced sphere, to which you have become qualified, and with the absolute knowledge that your decision to move on is final. There's no turning back. With that definition, every advancement from grade through grade as we pursue our education here on Earth could be considered a death. We leave one grade behind and go on to the next. In all our previous deaths, though we left behind blessed states, we went on to the next level of our eternal progress, and it was a celebrated advancement for us. Just as graduating from elementary school and going on to high school, then college, are also causes of joy and celebration. In one sense, graduation from third grade in elementary school and going on into fourth is death, in that you're done with third grade and have gone on to a higher level. Is this a trivializing death? In a sense, it is somewhat trivial, and we tend to make a lot more of it than it deserves, though any milestone in our lives, minor or major, deserves some sort of recognition and perhaps even celebration. But as we consider death in the light I shall turn on it as we go, we come to realize it's not as big a deal as we make of it here in mortality. Even though, as all milestones are in our lives, it's nice to achieve them. Now, for those who have experienced deaths of loved ones, parents of a child, child of parents, spouse, brothers, sisters, close family members or friends, you miss them. Of course you do. I'm not going to deny that nor trivialize it. They should be missed. They should be grieved for. There are grieving processes that I'm not going to go into now, but are appropriate in the situation. But by and large, we need to realize they aren't dead. They have just gone on to a newer and a higher level. Consider the deaths we have already passed through. We started as an indistinguishable entity of potential in an amorphous and infinite sea of potentials, or ideas, or thoughts, as we mentioned in the prologue. Somehow, some way, we were fished out of that milieu and encapsulated in an intelligence body. I think that might be a feminine activity. I heard from a highly dubious and unauthoritative source, who nonetheless is a hoot to listen to. Now, let me see now. Did I anywhere promise serious high-level scholarship in this work? I don't think so. Females were responsible for intelligences, among other things, and it is from that spirit of femininity that we get our beginnings as intelligences. I wish I had some sort of corroboration for this, but I pass it along as an entertaining idea and a salute to femininity, the beginners and nurturers of life across the universe. I've titled this chapter Death Birth because we usually think of death as final and an end, but that's only half true. With every death, there's a birth immediately following it, and that birth is the beginning of a new form of life, new challenges and opportunities for us. Our first death birth, as written about in the prologue, was when we were taken out of that sea of anonymous potentials and embodied in some kind of form that got us to thinking in terms of me and not me. We became sentient. In dying, we left behind our anonymous sea of potential and became, for the first time in our existence, an individual. The birth was into what is called an intelligence. Our next death birth came when we left our intelligence body behind, or perhaps it was included and just enlarged upon when we were born as spirit sons and daughters of God. At that point, we had a form in the spirit like unto that which we would eventually take upon completion of our journey to be like our Father and Mother in heaven. And we were no longer just formless lights floating around in the sky like fireflies. We would never be just intelligence again. It was a death in that we left an old life behind and were born into a new one, locked into a body and onto a path that could lead in only one direction from there, be that direction animal, vegetable, or human. That next death, or advancement on the spiritual plane, if you will, was when we chose to have our intelligence enclosed in a spirit body fashioned specifically for us by God. As will be mentioned in greater detail elsewhere in this work, the body we took as a spirit body suited our desire for advancement and development. You and I, the reader and writer of this work, chose the highest form of life available in the cosmos, that of being like God himself. The great majority of our fellow intelligences chose something lesser. They had their agency and their freedom. They could have chosen to go as high as us, but something deep in their souls, probably a reference back to their original potential, said, "No, I'm fine with a lower level of life, such as dog, fish, pine tree, or whatever." Okay, as long as they had the freedom to make that choice, could understand the consequences and limitations imposed, and are happy and satisfied with their final level of existence, I have no quarrel with them. When we finally signed off on that spiritual level, that was two deaths in one. The death of the old generalized intelligence, limited intelligence, limited without body except an intelligence body, and the death of any higher level of attainment. Our most recent death birth was leaving the heavenly home of our parents to come to earth and gain, temporarily at least, a mortal body. This flesh and blood body is our first experience with a material world, or at least a materiality that is coarser and much more demanding than what we were used to. In leaving behind our spirit-only state, we also left behind our memories of that state, so this life could be a true test of our integrity and character and how we deal with matter for the first time in our eternal lives. In a sense, and Scripture refers to it as such, there were two deaths involved in this. Number one was a separation from God and our heavenly home. Number two is the mortal death we shall all experience, even Christ. Christian theology teaches us that the death of Jesus Christ on the cross overcame the effects of both of these deaths, at least for those who are willing to repent and follow him. We will all get our mortal bodies back in a perfected and immortal state, thanks to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But as to living again with God, that can be a different matter, depending on our willingness to learn and live his ways of life and conduct. We have two more deaths ahead of us, one when we lay this mortal body down, and the last when our spirit is given a resurrected immortal body. I believe at that point there will be no more deaths for us. Therefore, death shouldn't be a subject of fear and dread for us. We're old hands at it, and have had at least three experiences with it. Easy for me to say, I'm not dying, at least as of this writing. though, yeah, we're all dying from the moment we're born, many tragically to us, sooner than parents and family would like. Apparently, those in the spirit world don't like to be called dead. It is somewhat of a pejorative to them, and they prefer a term reflecting the transition from mortality to immortality, and a close approximation is the new birth. This is from a manuscript of a vision given to Heber Q. Hale of Boise, Idaho. I can appreciate that. Death or dead seldom has good news for us. Batteries go dead. Puppies die. One's chances for gaining hope for employment can become dead. But aside from the classic near-death experience of the tunnel and the light, what else happens? Quote, "The world in its blind ignorance hurls hundreds of thousands of souls into this, our land, but those who dwell in high realms are fully aware, long before it happens, of what is to take place upon the earth plane, and a fiat goes forth to the realms nearer the earth to prepare for what is to come." That is from Life in the World Unseen, previously quoted, page 85. In other words, they're waiting for you. They're expecting you and have prepared a place for you, no matter how many thousands of millions you may have died with at the same time. Monsieur Benson, from Life in the World Unseen, writes of what it's like to be a spirit in the spirit world. First, he catalogues all the negative things that can afflict us here. Hunger, disease, fatigue, evil from family and friends, aging, well, I'm sure any reader can add to this list. Then he says, now eliminate completely and entirely every one of these unpleasant disabilities that I have enumerated. Exclude infallibility and everlastingly the cause of them, and you should have in your mind some idea of what it feels like as a spirit person. Page 112 in that book. Immediately after Benson's departing his body, he notices his clothing. The corpse still had its clothes on, of course, but Benson was also clothed, as he relates. I was extremely surprised to find that I had on my usual attire, such as I wore when moving freely and in good health about my house. Page 6. Benson further notes, there is no change in personality upon the moment of death. Souls are exactly the same the instant after passing into spirit life as they were the instant before. This is important to note. You do not change just because you die. He says deathbed repentances are of no avail, since the majority of them are but a cowardice born of fear of what is about to happen. Same book, page 10. Since the spirit mimics the body from which it has recently departed, are a good percentage of the people in the spirit world old and wrinkly? Benson says, we lose the wrinkles that age and worldly cares have marked upon our countenances, together with other indications of the passage of years, and we become younger in appearance while we grow older in knowledge and wisdom and spirituality. We advance according to our age towards what we have always known as the prime of life. Page 17. Many of the presidents of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have weighed in on the topic of death. The following excerpts are taken from a work titled Teachings Concerning the Spirit World, the Next Phase of Existence, or in a more modern vernacular, we could call these near-death experiences. President John Taylor of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints describes the spirit world thus, death, this dark shadow and veiling, is so trifling. One is passed from a state of sorrow and grief into a state of existence where I can enjoy life to the fullest extent as far as that can be done without a body. I thirst no more. I want to sleep no more. I hunger no more. I tire no more. I run, I walk, I labor. Nothing like pain or weariness. I am full of life, full of vigor. Discourses by Elder John Taylor, Deseret News, 20th July, 1874, page 1. President Spencer W. Kimball, the meaning of death has not changed. It releases a spirit for growth and development and places a body in the repair shop of Mother Earth, there to be recast, remolded into a perfect body, an immortal, glorious temple, clean, whole, perfected, and ready for its occupant for eternity. In other words, a perfectly resurrected body, courtesy of Jesus Christ. The Teachings of Spencer W. Kimball, page 45. President Brigham Young, when the breath leaves the body, your life has not become extinct. Our life is still in existence. And when you are in the spirit world, everything there will appear as natural as things now do. Spirits will be familiar with spirits in the spirit world, will converse, behold, and exercise every variety of communication with one another as familiarly and naturally as while here in Tabernacles. Discourses of Brigham Young, page 380. President Ezra Taft Benson, another of the purposes of man's mortal probation is to pass through the experience we call death. This experience is necessary to fulfill the merciful plan of the great Creator. I know we may not think of it as merciful, but remember again chapter 1, the eschatological outlook. Think like God. Book of Mormon, page 72, on that merciful plan quotation. In death, the body returns to the earth or the elements from which it was created, and the spirit goes into the world of spirits, there to await the day of resurrection. Teachings of Ezra Taft Benson, page 30. The idea of rest when it comes to death, such as rest in peace, commonly found on tombstones, is not rest as we know it here, lying back in a recliner and watching TV. Rather, it's a rest from the troubles, cares, and sorrows of this world. Elder Neil A. Maxwell, The Promise of Discipleship, page 106. There will be a certain peacefulness and restfulness in paradise because the faithful will see things with a more complete, restful, and reassuring perspective. Maxwell, same book. Furthermore, the spirit body will not suffer certain of the ills and constraints which now beset the mortal body. The rest will be added zestfulness there. Same book. However, as will be stated in another chapter, when we pass through that tunnel of light to the being of light, we are asked to give an accounting of the experience we've just had and what we learned from it. Many near-death experiences say they were sent back because they hadn't yet accomplished the things they were sent here to accomplish. I will assume throughout this book that this mortal probation is an important part of our eternal schooling, and we mustn't cut it short. In one case, the father felt that if he had had more faith, then his daughter would have recovered from a fatal illness, and probably many parents feel that who have lost a child. It was pointed out, however, that the Lord said that those who have faith in me shall be healed if they are not appointed unto death. That suggests that we are here filling a mission on earth. Now, if the Lord asks us, calls us to a greater calling, I ask you, would any of you want to remain here 1 hour more than the Lord wants you to live in mortality if he had something else for you to do? The Teachings of Harold B. Lee, page 48. Our ultimate goal should be to return to God and live like and with him, not as innocent spirit children anymore, because that's forever gone, but as fully developed, mature, spiritual adults functioning as franchise holders in the family business, as I have described elsewhere. As planned obsolescence is built into everything we own, and as entropy would take over and work the same deterioration that the planned obsolescence would work in any event, so entropy is planned in our bodies. If I understand correctly, it's in our genes. There's a molecule in our DNA that dictates how many times a certain cell may reproduce exactly. Then, after a predetermined number, things start to go haywire. Our DNA has a segment in it that dictates the number of times a cell can reproduce, a time clock with an expiration date, as it were. That's why our organs age and eventually cease to function. The cells shut down reproducing themselves, and this leads to our death, if nothing else does. It is speculated that if this clock could be turned off, theoretically, we could live forever, assuming no disease, accidents, or hitman blowing us away because we've cheated the mob out of their money. And a side note, is that the effect of eating the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve? Our DNA was switched from Adam's, which gave him immortality, to our present state, which gives us an endpoint to this mortal existence. And the Tree of Life would restore the proper functioning of our aging DNA. If I have it right, that's also one of the problems in cloning. A clone may be a new infant, but because it's made from older DNA, it ages rapidly and has a much shorter lifespan. I think that's why Dolly the sheep, the first cloned mammal, had so many problems and died early. All this is from faulty memory, but one can't help but wonder how much of this mortal life is controlled by DNA, besides just making kids look like their parents. It wasn't always that way. In the original Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve had been given immortal bodies of God by God. My assumption is that it's against the rules of godhood somewhere to make anything inferior or mortal. Therefore, they had to eat the forbidden fruit on their own volition, so they couldn't come back at God and accuse him of their fall from a state of grace, innocence, and immortality. Now, as to the actual event we all face, consider this interesting tale from the Book of Mormon. It involves the last acts of two warrior kings known as Jaredites. They had fought numerous battles, and their bloodlust and hatred for each other was a possessing, consuming, overwhelming factor in both their lives. In the final battle, Shiz and Coriantumr faced off, and Coriantumr finally beheaded Shiz, page 518 in the Book of Mormon. And it came to pass that after he had smitten off the head of Shiz, that Shiz raised up on his hands and fell, and after that he had struggled for breath, he died. My take on this is that Shiz's spirit could not accept death and tried to struggle on with a totally unworkable body. He was beheaded, after all. His mind must have communicated to his spirit something to the effect of, "Hey, Shiz, it's over. No use trying. Your body will no longer respond to your commands." And the spirit of Shiz was ineluctably transported off to spirit prison. The bad guy in the movie Ghost also comes to mind. He's speared by a large piece of jagged, broken glass. His spirit emerges from his body. With horror, he views this theme, then is dragged off to hell by dark spirits. Thus is the implication. Hopefully, all of us will face more benign deaths than these two examples, but face and go through death we must. As I write this, as I read this, I am 74 years old, and the winding down of my body is a daily confrontation in my life. I say I don't fear death, and I don't. Having written what I've written about the cosmos and what's going on outside of this microcosm reality, I have no fear of what's next. It's the process of getting there that gives me second thoughts. Will I wind up in some run-down nursing home somewhere, drooling on myself, barely conscious? I think very few of us get the death we deserve, a quick, easy, and painless one. My best friend from childhood has written me. His dad, who caddied around a bit on his wives, had a massive stroke at 81 and was dead before he hit the ground. One of his former wives, the mother of my friend, and a great lady who figured prominently in my childhood, lived to nearly 100. Now, justly, shouldn't those two scenarios be reversed? Shouldn't she have had the quick and painless death, and her old cad of a husband be consigned to suffering the last few years of his life? The judgments of men and God are often disparate. C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity, previously cited, notes how those who constantly seek for thrills are bound to become jaded, just like a drug addict who needs increasing doses of heroin to give him the same thrill. It is this addict's longing for increasing thrills that contribute to our fear of death. On page 100, Lewis writes, "People who are ready to submit to the loss of the thrill and settle down to the sober interest, who are then most likely to meet new thrills in some quite different direction." This is one little part of what Christ meant by saying that a thing will not really live unless it first dies. It is simply no good trying to keep any thrill. That is the very worst thing you can do. Let the thrill go. Let it die away. Go on through that period of death into the quieter interest and happiness that follow, and you will find you are living in a world of new thrills all the time. In a work titled Life in the World Unseen, previously cited, a spirit who had lived in mortality, Monsignor Robert Hugh Benson, son of Edward White Benson, former Archbishop of Canterbury, communicates with Sir John Anderson Bart about what the world of the spirits who have died here in mortality is truly like. Let us start with his death, as that is what this chapter is about. The actual process of dissolution is not necessarily a painful one. It wasn't for Benson, anyway. When the physical sensations attendant upon my last illness left me abruptly, and in place of them a delightful feeling of bodily ease and peace of mind, the impulse to rise from my bed and the passing of all physical sensations marked the instant of my physical death and my birth into the world of spirit, page 94, previously quoted. Note also his combining of death and birth. Every death we have is followed immediately by a birth. In that manuscript, Life in the World Unseen, previously cited, the spirit visitor to the author, Monsignor Benson, describes his death as a relatively painless and quick one. I am aware that with many, such is not the case. With many, the physical body can be in increasing pain and incapacity over years, even decades. The takeaway here is that when the moment finally comes, it is not a moment of pain and fear, unless one has been a super evil doer and has much to worry about in terms of anticipation and judgment. As a minister, Benson had attended at many deathbeds and described the struggles that take place as the spirit seeks to free itself forever from the flesh. As to his own death, I had a presentiment that my days on earth were drawing to a close only a short while before my passing. There was a heaviness of the mind, something akin to drowsiness. Many times I had a feeling of floating away and of gently returning. I endured no feelings of physical discomfort. I had the sensation of the most extraordinary exhilaration of the mind. I knew for certain that my time had come to pass on. I had no fear, no misgivings, no doubts, no regrets. All that I wanted was to be away. I suddenly felt a great urge to rise up. I saw my physical body lying lifeless upon its bed, but here was I, the real I, alive and well. Page 5. Psychologist C.J. Jung, previously cited, thinks we need to discover in death a goal towards which one can strive, and that shrinking away from it is something unhealthy and abnormal, which robs the second half of life of its purpose. It would therefore be desirable to think of death as only a transition, one part of a life process whose extent and duration escape our knowledge. Page 112. Let's define death physiologically and get that out of the way. Easy to do. Even doctors disagree on when a person is actually dead, giving complex jargon-loaded definitions of brainstem death, total brain death, and such like. One doesn't have to have a dead brain to become dead. Many people die with fully functioning brains, but their hearts or some other vital organ have stopped working. A metaphor. You're driving and crash into a bridge abutment. Fortunately, you had your seatbelt and shoulder harness fastened and the airbags deployed. You walk away from this with nothing more than a minor scratch and a determination to never drink and text while driving again, and eating a gooey cheeseburger that slipped out the back of the bun and fell into your lap. But your vehicle is totaled. You send a photo to your insurance company, and they just send out a tow truck to haul it off to the nearest junkyard. So it is with our spirit's relation with our mortal bodies, whether the equivalent of a catastrophic crash or just the entropy of the aging process, there will come a point where we as eternal, immortal spirits can no longer get any use out of our flesh and blood. Death is when one's spirit finds the mortal body no longer habitable and must quit the premises. James in the New Testament says, "The body without the spirit is dead." Chapter 2, verse 26. Our mortal bodies, watching that faithful old vehicle being towed away for recycling, are akin to our spirit bodies, watching our mortal bodies being lowered into a grave or placed in a furnace for cremation. Three elements figure into the death process: the body, the mind, and the spirit. I see mind as, among other things, a link between the physical body and our spirit body. There will come a time with all of us when the mind informs the spirit, if the spirit hasn't already figured it out, that the body is no longer functional. Our next death is the one that currently occupies our minds, the separation of our spirit from a worn-out, ill, or destroyed mortal body, to go back as a spirit to God for that life review, which will also be discussed in a later chapter. But this isn't a return to our innocent spirit state just discussed. It is a continuation of the mortal experience as we review our lives, our mistakes, the areas where we are still ignorant and need to repent and grow. There is no going back to any of our former states, with the exception of going back to the world of spirits from whence we came. But we don't go back as the innocent, inexperienced spirits we once were before our mortal probation. We are no longer virgins. Most people don't think of death as an accomplishment, but I feel it is when rightfully achieved, just as is a diploma from high school or college. As I cover suicide in another chapter, I won't dwell on death wrongfully earned, but only on the death that all the rest of us face. No righteous man is ever taken before his time. In the case of the faithful, they are simply transferred to other fields of labor. The Lord's work goes on in this life, in the world of spirits, and in the kingdoms of glory where men go after the resurrection. Funeral services of Elder Richard L. Evans, Ensign Magazine, December 1971, page 10. What does death tell the cosmos about an individual? That he or she had the mortal experience and was a participant in all the trials and problems of that probation. It doesn't necessarily mean one passed them all with flying colors, as only Jesus Christ has done, but it does mean we took the course and had the opportunities and experiences it has to offer. I use the concept participant in describing death. I don't want to give the impression that the cosmos awards kudos for just showing up. Let's put death in perspective from one who's been there. Craig, who had a near-death experience, as reported in Lessons from the Light, previously cited, gives us 10 things to realize about death. Page 19. Number 1, there is nothing whatever to fear about death. Number 2, dying is peaceful and beautiful. Number 3, life does not begin with birth, nor end with death. Number 4, life is precious. Live it to the fullest. Number 5, the body and its senses are tremendous gifts. Appreciate them. Number 6, what matters most in life is love. Number 7, living a life oriented toward materialistic acquisition is missing the point, as Solzhenitsyn stated starting the first chapter on the eschatological outlook. Number 8, cooperation rather than competition makes for a better world. Number 9, being a big success in life is not all it is cracked up to be. And number 10, seeking knowledge is important. You take that with you. Speaking of number 6, what matters most is love, and number 10, seeking knowledge. In the last chapter, I'll say we have two goals to achieve in this life. Learn to love, love to learn. We might add to that this observation from Ruth Montgomery, A World Beyond, previously cited, who writes, "The salient point is that we all survive death with personality and memory intact." To close this chapter, let me cite English poet John Donne, 1571 to 1631, who wrote these famous lines on death in a work titled Death, Be Not Proud. Death, be not proud, though some have called thee mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so. Several lines edited out. One short sleep past, we wake eternally, and death shall be no more. Death, thou shalt die. And thus concludes this fifth podcast of the series, Becoming Human in the Cosmos, based on the book I have on Amazon. The next podcast will be titled Religion and the Meaning of Life, Part 1, and will deal with religion and spirituality. Join me, please, and thanks for tuning in, and special thanks to Craig Whitmore and Kate Whitmore, my technical people. Visit our website, HazelProductions.com. That's HAZELLE PRODUCTIONS.com. And thank you.